the date today is the 26th of April. I am at 219 Major Street with Ann Carner, her brothers Bill and John Carner. So first of all, thank you very much, all of you, because the two brothers came in from Mississauga for this interview, and I appreciate the trip that you took so the four of us could have a conversation. And your parents bought the house in 1944, and it's been in your family since 1944.
Yes.
I'm sure we have a lot to talk about, or you have a lot to talk about. So thank you very, very much. I'm going to start with a question of how old was each of you in 1944 when your family moved into this?
Okay, I was four.
So this is Bill speaking. Yeah. You were four.
Yes.
And I was about 6 months.
I don't know if it is. I'm the oldest anyhow, so...
And that's John.
Yes. Well, I'll have to figure that out. I'm now 80. So... I don't really know.
You were born in 1933.
33,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you would have been...
11.
11,
yeah. So you were 11 years old. So, and you lived your... And when did the... Have you been here the whole time, Anne?
I was away for about 5 years. In 1995 to about 2000.
Right.
To 2000, okay.
And then we got the house.
Yeah. And Bill and John... When did you move out of this house?
Okay, when I completed university, I was living in an apartment, actually on St. George, and then shared, because I started teaching out in Etobicoke, and then from there, in 75, we bought a house together in East Mississauga.
And
so we've been there since, and John was here.
So you were, John, you were here until 1975.
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh.
I had to look after this one.
Keep her behaving well.
Oh, she always behaves well.
Oh, thank you, John.
Do you have any idea, I mean, you were all young and you were only 11 being the oldest, do you have any idea what prompted your parents to buy in this neighborhood?
Well, they were renting, weren't they, on Huron? They didn't own that place on Huron.
No, they didn't.
And I guess they were looking, because they were of Austrian background, our parents. And so they all lived around Dundas and Spadina, in that area near St. Patrick's Church, you know, on McCall?
Yep.
Because that was the German church, right? And so then...
I also think because my dad was involved in the fish business, and he had the store on Bradford Fish, and John eventually got into the business, and I guess it was very close. I mean, you could literally walk it.
Where was the fish business?
Right in Kensington there, but on Spadina, just
right on Spadina.
Between College and... Dundas on the west side. 390, I think it was. 390.
Bradford Fish Company.
Bradford Fish Company.
So he had a business here, and that was convenient that he could walk to work in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It wasn't his business. He worked for a gentleman.
Well, he owned a quarter of it, right, John?
No. Yeah. Not till later on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But that's where his work was.
Yes.
Right.
It was a lawyer who owned half of it, and then I don't know
Weinberg. John Palmerston,
he owned it, and then he had two partners, my dad and his Eddie, right? Were a partner,
Okay, so you think that was probably a big factor that your father wanted to live near where he was already working.
Yes, and I think also, as Ann pointed out. St. Patrick's at that time at McCall was sort of a community for a lot of the immigrants that had come in. Like our folks came in from Austria in the late 1920s. And so they lived in that area. So there was a large German-speaking community. And I guess part of that, too, was the proximity of still being close enough to that, you know,
to that
area,
community.
So as that community, you know, that was gathered there.
I think that's human nature, to need communities and to want to live with close to people that we share so much with.
Right.
Yeah. So your father stayed at that business and eventually he owned it?
Yes, part of it. Like they were partners.
Uh-huh,
yeah,
uh-huh.
And he became a partner in the business.
So 1944, your father was working there.
Right.
How many years did he continue to be part of that business?
Until he died.
Yeah, well, he died very young, 1948.
He died in 1948?
Yeah, he was 44.
Oh,
so
it was
quite a tragedy. Yeah. It happened very quickly.
Yeah.
And,
he got pneumonia.
Yeah.
Oh. And in those days, they didn't have the medicines, right, that we have today.
Yeah. And he would not stay at home. That's the way it was. If he's working there, he'll stay there.
And then by the time he got into the hospital, he had, his lungs were all congested, and he died of congestive heart failure. I think John and Bill, you looked it up. John looked up what caused our dad's death.
So the market brought you here, but your father died young, and then.
Yeah.
But you were already living in this neighborhood.
So then my mother, to meet, bills and that, they rented out the house, right?
Yeah,
like
the
upstairs on the second floor was rented out to.
And the third floor. So.
And part of the third floor, yeah.
So slow down. Let's stay with that for a while. That means that the three children and your mother, you all lived on this floor?
Yeah.
Yeah, when we were, I can't remember, but.
After your father died.
Oh, you know what happened.
Because I was.
We've always, I mean, there are two bedrooms on the third level. So realistically, because I can remember, even when my dad was alive, because one of the fellows who lived on the top level with us, we had the big front room, John and I, that was our bedroom.
On the second floor.
On the third floor.
Okay.
And then Mr. Lapine, remember him? He was from Quebec or somewhere. He lived in the second bedroom, and he worked at the store.
That's right.
Right. And then...
The store being the fish store?
That's
yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people, they were Williams.
That's
Dorothy
and Ross.
Ross Williams.
Yeah.
From up around Port Credit Way,
right.
Port Elgin Way. And they lived in there on the second floor. So
two of them or more than
no,
two?
No, there were just two of them,
the
top floor. And they had the kind of the bathroom, et cetera, on that level. And they had a bedroom, two rooms, and then the kitchen, right? So that income obviously helped to pay
for the
expenses. And it was very good for my mom because that was there in place, right?
Because she did go out to work at a cookie factory, but...
Only part.
Part, yeah. And then it just got too much because she, so she just stayed home.
How old were all three of you when your father died?
Well, I was 1948.
Four.
I would be eight.
I was four.
Yeah, I remember he was buried on my
your birthday.
On my birthday,
and then
the family that was living up there,
June
the
and
Blacks,
Keith.
They had all the kids in from the community,
around
the street here that I knew. We had a little birthday party. Yeah.
Yeah, June said even though our father had died, that he was being buried, and my mom agreed. That it was Bill's birthday, so we're going.
Oh.
And it was on the King was buried that day too.
George VI.
I think wasn't it Queen Elizabeth's dad died and he was buried.
Was it there? I can't remember.
Before your father died, did you have these other people already living here, or was after your father died and?
No, some
down?
Of them were living here. Yeah, because Ross and Dorothy were living here, right?
Yeah.
And,
so your parents already needed that extra income to
join. Yes.
Okay. So the two of you slept upstairs in the big front room,
right.
And then the man who worked at the fish store
was
up there. On the second floor with you.
And I slept in the room here.
On the first floor.
First floor. And Mummy and Dad had the first like
bedroom.
The front room, what I have is a front room.
Uh-huh.
That was their bedroom. And then I had the one here.
Which is the
dining room now.
Yeah. And then there was a couple on the second floor.
And there was no washroom here. There was like a big closet.
So
that was an actually kitchen pantry.
Yeah,
that's right.
At one time. And then they turned it into a closet and they had closed this wall. So when we renovated, you can see where there was an alcove to go into there.
Yeah.
And so everybody, all these people on all these floors, you shared one bathroom. Or was there a second bathroom?
Time,
yeah.
Yes.
one bathroom.
And kitchens? One kitchen?
There was a kitchen, no, there, and it still is. Well, I mean, there's a sink up there, but I don't use it as a kitchen, but that used to be the kitchen where
so
the
there was a second kitchen.
Yeah.
That couple
kitchen,
on the second
yeah.
floor.
And we all used the one bathroom, yeah.
Uh-huh. Now there are three.
There's only one person.
Well, how life changes, eh?
You have your choice. Every time you need to go to the washroom, you have to choose which one should I go.
Well, most of the houses around here at that time were like that. There was one bathroom, right?
And a lot of people living in all the rooms. I mean, I'm not surprised to hear that the number of people who were sleeping on this floor and the next, that was...
That's where, and earlier when, I know when my folks came, when they lived down in that Grange area, you know, where the AGO is now, I mean, a lot of them, you know, they were a family on each level.
That's right.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's how they had to live in order to survive. Right?
Well, Mom said they had like one, like when they first came, they had like one common kitchen, and you'd have one room, like each couple had a room, and that's how they lived.
Yeah.
You know, and they got along fine, and they had maybe one toilet, but everybody managed, and you know, they survived.
Well, and I mean, it's talking about the kind of money that people had, or didn't have. So people bought the homes; they were happy to be homeowners, but they couldn't pay for it with on one salary.
Exactly.
That's right.
And in those days, the women didn't really work.
Did you know any women who worked? Or pretty much they stayed home.
Well, Dorothy worked upstairs.
Yeah, she. But they were English speaking. You see.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom worked.
She worked as
a cleaning lady.
That's right. In Holland.
When John was a little baby, and they lived.
Well, that's
down.
When they lived. But when she didn't work when we moved.
No,
there.
when she had I guess you, Bill, she didn't have any working anymore.
But we're also talking about the socioeconomic description of this neighborhood that your mother worked as a cleaning lady.
Yeah.
And then she had a bigger family and didn't. But now it's such a different population here.
Well, remember across the street was the rag man.
Right.
Remember we had the house across this, not directly across, but the one next to, you know, our friend. I don't even know her. Eleanor, who told you to call me.
Okay. Yeah.
That house beside her, he was the ragman. Remember, he had a horse and a buggy, and he would go around and collect all the stuff. Remember?
Yeah, he was one of the last holdouts.
Yeah,
but they also came like when bringing ice in the back of a wagon.
Yeah.
No truck. It was all with horses.
Yeah.
No. I remember when the first large Dominion opened up there.
Oh, yeah.
Because prior to that, you can still see remnants, like the house on this corner still has the front. So there was a grocery store here.
Grocery store on the other side.
Piggyback over. The next street over on Robert, as you know, there were three stores there. And you can still see on the house on the northwest corner, they still have the facade of the house. And there was a tailor shop there, and so it was very much like Europe here, where every day you shopped. This was our old little room in the back here. Was the back kitchen, and we had an ice box. So every other day or every third day, big block of ice came, you know, and they had the ice box there, right? Coal was brought in.
You even have the coal chute still out there.
You still have it?
Well, not that doesn't come in, but where the
window,
chute is still
there.
The window where it is.
And there was, you know, the big furnace, you know, that sent pipes up to all the rooms, right? And, but, I mean, as a kid, I can remember, you know, before popsicles, we would, you know, the ice wagon would come along, and what did we do? All slide and got those slivers of ice and suck on those on those very hot days. You know, that was a real treat for us as kids, you know? Yeah.
And then at the corner here, the corner house on the other side, on Sussex, the north side, they had a ladies' wear shop in that window where all the plants are now.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, we would go to Eaton's, of course, and Simpson's. I mean, my mom would go down there. But we would always go there to see what she had to sell. And I remember my mom bought one of these lovely long, half coat. And green, I still can remember the color. And it was so nice and comfortable. Bought it in that little shop.
Isn't that amazing that you remember it so clearly?
Yeah, because, well, you know, it was one of the first times I had, like, a jacket-type coat, right?
Oh, she bought it for you?
For me, yeah. And we would go in, and the lady had all, you know, dresses and underwear, all
was
the lingerie.
Was it children and adults?
Yeah,
so
but
it's just
was, like,
women
a
of all ages,
I remember going in there,
These are fabulous memories. I mean, these slivers of ice.
I mean, you remember those things. I mean, the, you know, the horses.
Think of all the different things that the horses were moving around the streets delivering.
Right.
What? Tell me.
Well,
the horses.
When the weather got good and, you know, getting into June when there was produce, vegetables
June
came through.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
So it was an open wagon behind?
Yeah, it was a straight wagon.
So it wasn't some refrigerated truck.
No.
And we had milk in the bottles. I still have some of the bottles downstairs. And in the winter, sometimes the caps were off because the ice, you know, freezing the ice, so it would come up. So the milkman came and he delivered the milk.
And the bread was delivered the same way.
So much was delivered.
Yeah. And then the horses out there, you know, they...
They left
their sparrows there going through the old horse balls. You know what I mean? it was food, you know. So, there was that tradition that lingered here quite, for a while, the ragman coming through.
Right.
And
what was the ragman?
Well, he was, today it's like the, out our way, when they phone out the Diabetes Association, they say, would you put put clothing out because they're collecting it, you know, for whatever. He'd come along just shouting rags, you know.
So
like,
your clothes that you were
wearing, anything, junk.
Anything, and then also there were people coming along collecting, old bits of metal, like if you had an old ice box or, anything of that nature. That
so they would
were
take
the recyclers.
It away for you.
Yeah, they're like the recyclers of today.
And they probably made a buck on it, right?
You're right, they were the recyclers. Yeah. Nobody heard the word recycling at that time.
But the ladies, I don't know on Borden, but we have every day that we put out the garbage, right? Somebody comes around and picks out all the tins and cans. Well, they didn't actually, because we didn't, I guess we had garbage pickup, but, they didn't go through the garbage, but people knew they were coming, and so you put the stuff and they would take it, And we had the lady who sharpened the knives, remember?
Oh, yeah.
A person coming around with the little stand.
The
and
grind,
The grinder and everything.
How would she get
And she'd ring
attention?
A bell.
She had a bell.
And she ran up, went up and down the street ringing the bell, and then people would take out their knives to be, ground and everything. Oh, yeah.
We still have that. They come through. I don't know if they come around in the city, but out in the, we're in East Mississauga, so there's a guy, John, he's...
That's right.
He has a truck, and he comes through ringing his bell. And if you've got, scissors or any of the tools that you might use in the garden, they sharpen. There he is.
I hear that bell occasionally, but really occasionally.
But they're
in the neighborhood.
They're a truck too now. It's not like this girl. And it was a girl who actually did it. A young woman would do it.
Yeah.
That's how she made money, I guess, for herself and her family. I mean, you didn't ask too many questions, right? You just wanted your implement sharp.
These are very valuable memories because you're talking about the 40s and the people I'm meeting. I'm not meeting too many people who lived here in the 40s or early 50s. So you're telling me stories that are so colorful and. I'm glad that we're recording all this.
Well, Nellie's was across the street. Oh, yeah. That was a store. Now, there's no store there anymore. That's that big building there, on the corner. Like
house.
Looks like a house from the out in the suburbs. You know that house on the corner, the north side of Sussex?
Yes.
Well, that was Nellie's.
And what was Nellie's?
Nellie's was like a little grocery store.
Yeah.
And so we would go to the show on Saturday. We were given like 25 cents to go.
10 cents.
Well, what for you, but for my time was 10 cents for you, 25 for me. And we would go to the Alhambra.
Where was the Alhambra?
The Alhambra was... That was, and the Midtown was on the other side. That's where
College?
The old docks are now.
No, it's
okay.
Hot
on
Dogs.
On Bloor Street.
On Bloor Street. And on the other side was the Alhambra.
There were three shows there.
That's right.
Three movie theaters.
Three movies.
Wow. So what is now the docks up there originally was the Midtown. And it's kind of interesting when you go in there. I was up to the docks. We went up to see the docks not too long ago. And they renovated it, and they have pictures of what it looked like in the old days and what it is now, And then across from that, they had the Bloor.
Yeah.
And then west of Bathurst, on the north side, oh, about three or four blocks in, that's where the Alhambra.
That was opposite Honest Ed's. Was Alhambra.
So you had three movie theaters in a 5-minute walking distance.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, if you walk on Bloor, where they have the building now that has all that drawing outside next, and what do they call it when they
tattoo store
next to the tattoo shop? That was the Bloor. And so you'd go to Nellie's and you'd bring your nickel, and she would give you all these. You could pick the candies you want, like, you know, and you get a little bag of candy, and with that bag of candy you went to the store and went to the show, and you saw your movies, like,
and
the westerns or
serials, and, you know, because they ran these Western serials, and then there were probably two shows, right? There was always two shows, so I mean, it was like every Saturday afternoon, it was like you were there all afternoon.
And comics, too, like, you know, like Popeye, you know, the Popeye comics, and the pigs, you know, and McDonald, what's his name, Donald Duck, you know, and those things. Great movie.
Did you go with your mother?
No,
the children went by themselves.
Because they were essentially shows geared for the kids.
But the children were allowed in.
Yeah, that's
parents,
like matinees.
Wasn't
it? You had to go. I mean, those were the days when, you know, it wasn't all the talk now as we have, where people are almost paranoid. I mean, it's understandable, say, but I know particularly in the suburbs, you know, the school could be down the street, and people have to either drive the kid or walk it because they're concerned. And I know the media and everything else blows up a lot of this stuff, but that's a very different mentality from the day when, you know, we go up and, you know, just walk up there, and that was it, right?
And Shane, though, who was the house, two houses down, like, we used to play outside all the time. We played school, we played tag with all the other kids on the street.
So the children were out on the street without the parents hovering.
No, and then her mother would call around 5 o'clock every night, Shane will come in for junket.
What's that?
It was something she made, I don't know. And then remember, we used to go to their house because Shandel's parents, but the grandparents were Orthodox Jewish people. And her parents, I mean, they still did a few, like, I don't know whether her father went out to work, but we would go and light the stove for them turn on the lights.
On Friday night and Saturday.
Saturday.
That's right.
And then we would get our nickel.
But they wouldn't pay you at the time, they would pay you.
Well, they have it on the counter. It was ready for you. Like,
and,
you know.
Sometimes honey cake.
And honey cake, yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Oh, not only next door, but like Lloydie next door.
Yeah, I didn't go to Lloydie. I just went to Shandel.
He became a rabbi then, remember? Yeah. But we had that was kind of a fascinating time because there was very much still a very strong Jewish presence. Uh-huh. And, you know, the history of there. And if you can see, there was almost on every other street a synagogue, you know? So, there's still one functioning now south on Robert Street there.
Just north of Harbor.
Yeah, and it's the Reformer.
And there was one on the north, on just north of Sussex there. That's
on
the
which
Learning
street?
Center.
On Brunswick.
Right
Brunswick
on the
Brunswick.
Yeah, building
that,
there.
Yeah, that corner, Brunswick and Sussex, the east side, that was a synagogue too.
So there
a
were
smaller one?
That building that you see there is the same size, right?
Yeah.
And there were
There were two synagogues on Brunswick.
Yeah. Right.
And there's more, like, if you go into the Jewish Y, you can see the pictures of the various synagogues that they have, because I go into that building.
So there were two synagogues on Brunswick. And what about churches?
The closest one for us, because we're Roman Catholic, was St. Peter's, which is right at Bathurst and Bloor.
Yeah,
so
on
that
the,
was
yeah.
also close.
Yeah. And then there was an Anglican one on Lippincott, wasn't that where you played floor hockey?
Yeah.
And then
that became the Salvation Army.
And now it's a Filipino Baptist church, I think. Mm-hmm. And that was there.
And of course, up here in the United Church.
Yeah, Trinity United up here.
Has that been there? This has been that long. It was here in the 40s.
They were all functioning and.
That's used as a church, but also as a
community
center.
And plus the
Tafel
Music. I'm glad they're staying there. Because they were originally thinking of going over to Kerner Hall.
Oh.
And the atmosphere would not be the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Shindo's grandfather, remember, he used to make a sukkah bush in the backyard, you know, like, and when it was the holiday time, you know, he
would make it out in the backyard, like the little cabin kind of thing.
No, that, again, were the sort of the grandparents, you know, that were more. And the I remember Shindo's grandmother, she still wore the wig, you know.
They were really orthodox.
Yes.
Yeah, very, very. And we did it for a few houses here, or, you know.
I just did shingles.
A regular.
Everybody had to get a bit of the money, right, so we could go to the show.
So you were working, that was child labor.
Well,
No, it wasn't. What,
so
we would have gone without anything.
And
yeah,
on
yeah.
The
they were our, like, Shingle and I played
the They were all
the
our
time.
Friends.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
mean,
yeah.
we had a clubhouse at the back here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and it was good fun because we had different holidays, so we took advantage, each of us. And I remember we played a lot in the big house in the corner, and then Abby was in the corner here, and you played with each other, even though you might not have been going to the same school with them, right?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So there was a lot of that integration. And so
tell me, so did you speak German in your home, or
our,
did you speak English?
Our mom spoke to us in German, and we all sort of answered it English. So mom learned English, but we also learned. We went to German school.
No, you didn't, but
we went to German school up here in Trinity United. They had a German school for, and we went for a couple of years.
Were you in that?
Yeah, you went.
Well, I went. I remember, but I can't remember. I don't even remember where it was.
It was in Trinity United.
Okay,
yeah, they had classes in there. Like, they set up a little school. And we went and learned how to read.
I think it's very similar to a lot of the people coming into Canada, where they want to continue their culture and connection. So they, you know, they have Saturday school. So it was very similar to us. So you know, it gave us learning how to write German
and
to read.
Yeah.
And
so your mother spoke German to you, and you responded in English.
Well, and I
mostly.
Mean, as and, and my mother then would, you know, like a word here in English, a word in German, you know, and it was that sort of thing, you know. So it was almost like interchangeable, right?
Yeah. Well, who else lived here? So you talked about Shindo and her Orthodox grandparents, her parents.
Right.
Who else was here? So. Your family was here, German speaking or English speaking, and Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Who made up this?
There were other
the neighborhood at that.
Eastern European families, right?
Yeah.
Some
yeah.
of the house. I think they were white Ukrainian.
Yeah.
And then there were also Canadian families.
There was a black
here.
Family that lived about three stories down, but I think that was in the 60s.
Yeah,
they
came coming in later.
Yeah.
But I mean, a lot of them, the people here. Were essentially Jewish people living
until they started moving north,
you know, up to Lawrence and areas north of there.
And then you have all the like the Greek families moving in, the Italian families,
a few English
that came from leaving their countries. They came here. Then the people, the places they took, were the ones that came the time before.
Yeah.
So it keeps going around and around.
Yeah.
What do you think that was about, that you said the Jewish families moved north?
Well, maybe their synagogues, you know, bigger synagogues opened up there, and maybe a bigger home, like, you know, here, and, you know, renovations or whatever, and, you know.
And maybe they got into better jobs and business, so that they can go to a different place, or a better place than they had.
Your sister and brother are younger than you, talking and telling me so many wonderful stories. Do you have any memories from those same years, but you were a few years older?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that comes to your mind that they haven't talked about?
The only thing I did, I went to school and then I went to work after that at the store where my dad was.
How old were you when you began to work?
Oh.
You're probably 18, John.
No, younger, because
Dad died, and then you quit that year that Dad died school, and you went to work.
Yeah, well, that's always nothing else.
Yeah, so you went to work.
So you started working at that fish store at a young age, and then after your father died, you came out of school to work full time.
Not right away, but I did work. The fellow that my dad worked for, the Jewish couple, they were very kind to us and to me. I could work there, and not a bad a wage. So I stayed in there until I finished my school, and then I moved on.
Until you finished your school, meaning high school?
Yeah.
So you worked there after your father died until you finished high school, and then you got a full-time job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, then I worked in the fish business anyhow.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had the experience, so I might as well work. Uh-huh. And then I got a much better salary, that's for sure.
And were you working in a fish store in Kensington Market?
In the same one that my dad had.
No, but after you said when you finished high school and you got a full-time job in a fish store.
Yeah, well, it was on Spadina, too.
Yeah. It
was the same building. Store my dad.
Yeah, so they wanted me, and I thought,
oh, they kept you on as a full-time employee
at
18 or 19 years old.
And then he became a partner eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you stay there until the end of your working days?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Uh-huh. What happened was... I guess into the late 60s and into the 70s, you know, there was all the problem with mercury, remember?
Yes.
So a lot of the fresh fish, because they had expanded. They were into importing.
Yeah.
They had storages down at the waterfront. You know, like, as the cultures changed and immigration changed, where more people came from the West Indies, as people came in from... particularly Portugal and Italy, then he got into much of the seafood. So they did octopus, you know, of that whole. So, and then, so as well as having the Jewish business, there was the Japanese holidays, you know, they did Jewish weddings. They had a Naftalese, which was a store up in the north up there in Bathurst area, way up there, where a lot of the Jewish community was. There was a store they had up there. And then also you dealt with the Minion store. So it became quite a large complex.
And this fish business grew.
Yeah, it really
and
grew.
And provided fish.
It really grew for all those different cultures and all of their different holidays. So
and you were able to take care of the Jewish ones or the Jamaican ones.
Everybody.
Chinese.
Yeah. They smoked fish. They had a massive tank with live carp. You know, they brought in these massive tuna. So it was that's what I think was very successful.
Yeah.
But then John had two partners. They were older than him. Eddie went right back to working when my dad was still there.
Mm-hmm.
He was too just an employee, and then they had the opportunity to get involved when Weinberg no longer wanted to deal with that, so they bought him out. And so one fellow died, and then the other partner had, because they were much older than John, so John wound up doing all this business.
He would have died.
And all of this. And I think you always had this feeling, because my dad died very young. He would never live past 44. So when the Chinese community were moving out of Elizabeth Street and all those places close to City Hall and expanding into the Spadina area... and a lot of that Hong Kong money was starting to read the writing on the wall, you know, because of China taking over. They were bought out by a Hong Kong Chinese company.
The fish store was bought out, and this whole expanded business that you had created.
And so John retired at the wonderful age of 44.
Oh.
And I'm still retired.
And can I have more coffee? I appreciate it.
You retired at age 44, but you sold a successful business.
Yeah, very successful. Yeah. So
you must have been a good businessman, because there were so many different... You expanded it in so many different directions.
I was very lucky, because everybody I worked with, they all could do the same thing. So we could all... If I did them something here one day, next guy wasn't here, we put another person there, and I'd go there. So we could work each way.
Yeah, but John, at the end there, you were working like you would be going to the airport getting fish at 7 or 6 o'clock in the morning.
That's right.
And then you'd be working till 7 or 8. He was like skin and bones. He wouldn't have survived. Would you like a coffee or tea?
No, thank you. I'm very happy with my water. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. So then I retired. So I had nothing. I got nothing to do since I was...
You did a lot. He used to come on... I taught school and he... You know, we had to get people for trips, right? And nobody wants to go with grade 7 and 8s, right? Nobody wants. So luckily he came along. If he hadn't come, we wouldn't have been able to go.
I enjoyed it. It was good. The kids were good. The kids weren't bad. Yeah. Not with her around, boy.
Strict teacher?
Boy.
Yes.
Well, you had to be with 7 and 8s, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
You teach in this neighborhood?
I taught down at St. Francis of Assisi, which is was on Dundas and Manning.
Uh huh.
Yeah, I taught down there. They were basically Italian children.
Uh-huh. So what schools did you all go to in this neighborhood?
We went to St. Peter's, you know, the one that's being ripped
down
there.
Oh, you all went to that one.
Yeah, because I went on the walk last year, you know, the Harvard Village walk.
Yes.
And this man was talking about, you know, we're going to build this building here. It's going to be 4 stories high. And he sort of poo-pooed the idea of the school. And I said, you know, we went here and we had great fun here for many years before it became like Loretto.
Yeah.
It was the old St. Peter's. And then St. Peter's went to Dominic Savio, which is not there anymore. And then it became Loretto College campus. You know Loretto Brunswick?
Yes.
It became a campus there. And then it became a school for, I think, adults. You know, and now it's being ripped down and it's being built into a huge 4-story, apartment building with stores on the bottom and 3 floors of apartments.
So that's had a lot of different incarnations, that
that
building.
Yeah. So, you sure I can't get you some tea or something?
No, thanks. I'm happy with this. Kensington Market was a part of your life because your father had a business there and then you worked there. I'm asking you to talk some more about Kensington Market, how your family used it.
Well, you provided the stores, the fish stores in the market. I think it was one was called Cohen's, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know if you still...
Called Cohen's?
Cohen's, yeah.
Whether they're still there, but they provided, you know, the fish for those places, as John did through all of these fish stores, really. I mean, you were one of the main distributors of life and, live fish as well as fresh fish that came from different parts of Canada, you know, because fish was a large part of the Jewish diet, right?
Yeah.
And for holidays, like gefilte fish. And you made gefilte fish, right?
That's right.
You made gefilte fish?
Sure. Well, we didn't cook it, but
you made the combination.
Skinned and boned the fishes
and chopped them up for them?
Well, if they wanted, we did.
Yeah, they had a grinder, you know,
they would chop their own stuff. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you would combine all the 2 or 3 or 4 kinds of fish.
Well, they'd have an opportunity to pick up what they want, and then
they would come and say, "I like that one. That looks
good."
Or a type of fish, like white fish.
You know, I want 20 pounds of this, and five, and so I would make out that, and that's it.
Uh huh. And if they wanted you to grind it, you would do that
too.
No,
we did not grind them.
I thought you ground them.
We skinned and boned them.
Uh huh. And then they would take it home.
They would grind it, and they would like to trim up all the bones too, and the heads.
Because
they wanted that for
John,
they wanted the heads for what?
They ground it.
Used them like the meat in the cheeks.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So they took that out. Mm-hmm. Not everybody, but some did.
Well, don't forget, in those days, you'd use everything if you could, right? Because you're paying for the whole fish. Want to
but
have...
They would make soups.
Soups and everything, you know.
And all
like,
of that
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
But I find it so amusing you're talking about turning on and off the lights in the stove and gefilte fish. You knew your Jewish neighborhood.
Neighbors. So you see, they wouldn't do it. They were very religious. They would not turn the lights off or on, you see.
Yeah.
So if you were around, they would go and take you.
No,
I don't know what happened when there was nobody around. I guess they would
have
to.
Well, I think we were always
around.
Because we were still here.
Yeah.
I mean, and it wasn't so much... that it was an imposition, or we were going. We knew
they were
like,
our
we
friends.
Played with these kids.
They went to school. With
so
them.
They would say,
"You're going to school.
You know, you're going to come in, or you know, and do it." And it just became
much the same as you go out and pick up the paper or something, you would go around. Yeah. A great little book, I don't know, a friend of mine, Teddy Schmidt, wrote a book, The Sabbath Goy.
And that was us.
Sabbath Goy.
Yeah. Have you read that?
No, I haven't.
Well, that's a book that you might want to look at, because that's what we were, the Sabbath Goy. Right. You know? and I mean, we didn't think anything of it. I mean, it was like a kind of a fun thing, and you got that extra nickel or a piece of honey bread, and it was something to look forward to.
Did some of these families or the parents speak Yiddish at home?
Did
you learn any Yiddish words?
Well, because some of the Yiddish is close to German, right? So then we could understand them. Like, I mean, Shandel's grandparents spoke Yiddish, and I'm sure her parents spoke it, but the parents spoke fluent English, as did, you know, Shandel.
Of course, the word Shane means beautiful.
Is it?
Yeah. Shane.
That's right.
That would be similar to
that's
the German.
Right.
So, what other languages did you hear as you went in and out of your friends' homes?
Well, I think probably a lot of the Slavic, probably Ukrainian.
Mm-hmm. Some Italian.
Well, that came,
later in the 50s
and
the 60s,
No, I mean, obviously there were people here that were Canadians. I mean, I don't know how long in terms of generation, but, you know, the corner house over there, there's a little young gal. I remember one Easter, not Easter, but Halloween, because they moved out to Mimico. You know, it was like a big loss, you know, one of our little, and then going out to her place, and it was like, ooh, out in the suburb, you know, and stayed over even, you know, and it was sort of fun being a little kid at that time. So, obviously, there were English families. I think there were some French-speaking families. Yeah. And but, you know, a lot, I think, predominant was were people probably from Eastern Europe, you know, and a very strong Jewish presence here. You know,
because
they
had
settled here,
and,
you know, they had the synagogues, and they had their own community, probably from where they were living in, you know, whatever part of Europe, Eastern Europe, and so they obviously gathered as community, you know. And so, you know, on the Friday night and then Saturday going to the shuls, they, you know, they would have just put on their shawls and with their books and run off.
I love the fact that you use the word shul. I mean, people would call it a synagogue, but you're using shul because that's what they called
it. Was called,
and then some of the, because I remember the elderly couple that lived across the street. And I guess, you know, they were, you know, Holocaust survivors. Because I never remember seeing any kids. And they lived, you know, they lived too in their 80s or late 80s. And I remember, I still have a vivid memory of the lady coming home. She must have had beginnings of Alzheimer's or something, and she didn't know where she was, you know, and she was coming home late. But I never remember that family having children. So, you know, they could have been people who came from the Holocaust time and they, you know, were able to, like our parents, buy that home. And they lived there and, you know, then eventually they moved away because she, you know, she needed care.
Do you remember people, you described that people lived in their own little communities, but you played with Shandel and...
Yeah.
Generally, did people get along? Did they go into each other's homes, the children, the older people? What was the atmosphere amongst all these different groups?
Well, I think we, as kids, went into homes. Like, I remember Lloyd's family, the first, the second house, or the first house beyond the store there, they got the first TV. I think it had to be early 50s. Well, obviously, it became a gathering point. And we were all there. I can remember it came on around 4 o'clock or something, howdy doody. I mean, we didn't get a TV here until much later.
Yeah.
And so that obviously was a gathering point, and everybody would show up there. But I think people, it was like on the street, if you saw somebody, our folks would talk to somebody.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there wasn't like they're coming over here for dinner. But I can remember going over to eat
in some of their places, like, and then I think Abby came here too.
So the children,
but not like
not the adults.
Like they talked, you know, outside, but they didn't come into the
socialize.
So, but don't forget then, like in the house, you had the bedrooms, the kitchen. And here was like the summer kit. Well, what we call the summer kitchen. So, you didn't.
The only gathering place would have been the kitchen because all the other rooms had beds.
Yeah,
that's right.
And so they would talk on the veranda, or they would talk out in the backyard.
Yeah. Okay, let's stop at the veranda for a minute. What was going on the verandas?
Well, just about every summer night.
Yeah.
I mean, people would be sitting out and chit-chatting, and particularly with neighbors reasonably close, you know, or across the street. I remember playing with a kid.
Yeah, there
His
was
name
a
was
a
Jerry.
Boy,
I can't remember.
Up the across the street that I used to play upstairs in their house with him. We used to play together.
So it was fairly, intense within, I don't know, two or three houses, realistically,
right.
Because honestly, I don't, as a kid, remember much.
No,
you know,
that's
the guy
right.
that who provided stores with candy, and he was always dishing candy out to us. And he lived at 207 Major, and I think that's about as far as I.
Yeah, this was our little enclave, like north of Sussex.
Beyond that first house.
And like say past Shandell's house,
it was a fairly.
It was just in this little area here.
Uh-huh. Yeah. See, and with me, I couldn't go with them. I was too old, so I had to do something else.
So, but the little kids,
yeah,
and even the parents who were hanging around on the front porch, it was your little. The houses maybe three or five, four, north of you or south of you.
Yeah, it was
but
a very tight.
It was a little tight enclave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What about the children? Where did you play when you were playing as children?
Well, I'll say essentially. Well, I said we had the little clubhouse.
Yeah.
So we had one of the really old hockey games. You know, and you play on those. I can remember playing cowboys and Indians and throwing clumps of dirt. You know, and you'd run up and down the lawns. You know, all that.
So you were playing on each other's lawns.
Yeah, on the street here.
Yeah, and
hockey.
Yeah.
I can remember on Sussex. Yeah. Gosh, we'd be playing road hockey, you know?
On the street.
Right on the street.
But then
we didn't have a net, but that was too much of a splurge, you know? But we played road hockey, and the little kids sat and watched on the corner. And I can remember you can talk about what you guys did as girls.
Well, we played school. Like Shandell and I, we'd be out here and we'd be playing school. She was the teacher sometimes, or I was the teacher.
Now you're pointing to the back.
Backyard.
So you're talking about playing
front and back.
The back.
We stayed in the
school.
Back. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then, but remember, I think Lloydie had a brother who was killed on the street. Like, you know, I guess a car or something hit him. And so I guess when that happened, you know, they didn't want us out in the front too much, so we had to play in the back.
But that was only short-lived,
I
think.
Yeah,
Is there a back lane behind you?
Yes,
there is a lane.
So did the children play in the back lane also?
No.
I think we were always on the street or, you know.
Yeah, never in the lane.
And,
no, never.
Right.
So was the lane used in any way?
Oh, yes. I mean, we kept a horse down here. You know,
and
a wagon.
Wagon
and a horse down there. So they actually...
Even the ragman, at one time, there must have been a lane between...
No, he was along here, too, wasn't he?
Yeah. Or maybe...
He bedded his horse in one of these kind of garages down along here. I mean, not a lot of people had cars in those days, very early days, you know.
See, there were horses in some kind of container, kind of building.
No, like they were like, for better or word, you know, like... makeshift stable or whatever, you know.
In this lane?
Yeah.
Right here behind Major Street.
Yeah.
And wagons, too.
Oh, yeah, they had their wagons.
They had their wagons, of course, where they couldn't leave them out on the street. Because they even had thieves then, you know. They even had thieves then. Because when Mom said when she moved up here, she hung the clothes out on the laundry. I guess there was no fence or whatever. and somebody stole my outfit.
Just yours?
Yes, or my little outfit. Somebody needed it.
They stole it from the back.
Mm-hmm.
Clothesline.
So I guess that's when they put in the fence and the garage.
What did you have right behind your house here? Where?
Well, there was my folks had a garden.
With what?
Well, it'd be vegetables, essentially. Maybe some raspberries or tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And I think we had grapes along the...
Let me see if I have a picture of John.
The thing is, we have had good friends that brought in...
I can't get through.
I'm sorry. Okay?
Yeah, thank you.
And they wrote in Cooksville.
Say that again? Sorry, I missed it.
We had friends who had a farm out in Cooksville.
Yes.
So if we needed anything, we could go out there, which was a big help for us, pick up different kinds of fruit and, cabbages or corn or things like that as it comes.
So you bought those from your friend.
Yeah.
But you also had a garden back here with some fruit and vegetables.
Right, yeah.
And you ate whatever you planted.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, they built this old garage. This was the old garage that was there that they built. There was an old garage there. Then they had here, their little playhouse was here.
You know, when Richard or somebody comes around, I hope you'll bring out this album, because I'm not making pictures, copies of the pictures.
And then see, when we're talking about the summer kitchen, this was here, the summer kitchen, you see? And this was a window. And this was a doorway.
Yeah. Well, you see, and what I would really love to have is the way it is now and what it was in 1945.
Okay. Yeah,
so whoever comes around, please have them do this.
Okay. See, this place is very different because
that was.
I mean, the families, obviously, in those days with the house. I mean, I was only 4 years here when we moved in here, so I don't really know them.
Oh,
but, I mean, they used the whole house. Most of these families that lived here, it was like the family. And I mean, economically, I think they were doing well, whatever they were doing. And they had a kitchen, there was a pantry here. The middle room was the dining room and a living room, and they all lived upstairs, right?
The way it's being used now, so that family that your family bought it from had more money.
That's right.
Because a lot of people I'm speaking to did it the way your family did it with
Bodies
in every room, beds in every room. But the family that your family bought
they
from
were
had more money.
Individual families who either, I was trying to remember, because I think, was it Shandel's father, was he a furrier or something?
One of them was.
I think he was the Spadina had a big trade at one time.
Fur,
you know, they had everything.
And he was a cutter, if I believe.
They had reasonably good jobs, in the trades, and so they did all right.
And generally speaking, when you were living here in 1945, 50, 55, what was the socioeconomic description? Who was living here, and how many families were living the way you were with renting out extra spaces to help pay the mortgage? What do you think?
Shandel had nobody living in her house. It was the grandparents, her father and mother, and herself. And her sister.
A lot of the homes were the same way. They had families that were living.
And Lloydie didn't have any.
I think
the Jewish families did not have renters. Like Lloydie's family was all by himself.
Yeah, but I think also because those families had a history here, unlike today where grandparents don't live, there was like the whole family.
Yes.
So it wasn't like
sending generation.
Yeah, it's not like sending off grandparents to a senior's home. Everybody stayed and would have died in their homes, and so that tradition obviously continued, obviously right into the mid-50s, late 50s.
Because I think after the grandparents passed away, that's when the Fishers moved away.
Yeah.
You were saying, John, you were saying something about who was living here at that time?
Where, here?
Just generally, the neighborhood, how it was.
Well, it was mainly Jewish people. That's what it was, mainly Jewish people.
Yeah, and Eastern Europeans.
Eastern Europeans.
They may not have been Jewish, but they were here. I mean, there were obviously some English-speaking families.
Not that many.
Yeah, no, not a lot, but there were some. And yeah. I don't know whether they were Canadian roots, but they, to me, I don't remember them as being British families. You know, it was, they were people with roots here from previous generations, you see. I'm trying to think of who else was along here.
See, most of the kids, because I went to St. Peter's, yeah. and there were not many kids that came to St. Peter's because they all went to the public system, because I can remember playing with all Jewish kids. That's why I played with.
So in the 40s and 50s, yeah. it was essentially predominantly
Jewish. Yeah, and then like when our neighbor here moved out, then Italians moved in, and they came as a group of big, like, you know, they were all adult people, mm-hmm. and they all paid for that house, and then they would buy a house somewhere else for somebody, and they paid it. Like, they were the new immigrants. That's what they did.
Yeah.
And then, like, our parents bought a house down the street, not yeah. like my mother remarried, and they rented out the rooms.
205
Major.
Your mother remarried. She stayed here, or she moved to
No, she stayed here,
but she bought
they,
it.
They
and
bought.
Went.
They bought, and then she, my mother, went like to
house,
people who came from Europe, and they went out to work. And my mom would go over and clean their rooms and give them sheets and towels and everything.
But she also took care of it.
And then there was a family on the first floor, but every other room in that house was rented out.
And people.
So that was a smart investment for your mother, I'll bet.
And
she was a bit of a businesswoman then.
She and my stepfather, they bought it, yeah. Uh-huh.
People tended to, I think in those days, just thinking about it, because we had then June and Keith Black, who knew the Williams that lived on the second floor when we first moved in, and my folks rented it to them, and then that's how they came in. But they were here for, I don't know, 10, 12 years, not longer.
They really liked
and they
it,
were like family.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like we went north with them and stayed with their grandparents, because they had their parents. They came from a farming family up on the Bruce Peninsula.
So we became
that was that very closeness. Mm-hmm.
And even my mom, like when she rented out those two top rooms there,
in the other house.
In this house, there were different people. Like, we had a Black person living in our, like, everybody. But everybody got, there was no, nobody thought of discrimination. You know what I'm saying? We grew up in an area which we were very lucky that everybody was accepted. It didn't matter who you were, what you were, what you believed, what color you were, nothing. You know, everybody was. So when I hear of discrimination, I find it really strange, because growing up, we never had that feeling here.
No.
You know, everybody was accepted. Didn't matter who you were or where you came from. We were all one.
And you shared things, too.
Yeah.
What's it like now compared to then, in terms of who's living here now in 2013?
Here we have, we've got Chinese people across the street. We have Greek people. We have John and Tamara. They're leaving, and they've sold their house. She's, I think, of Ukrainian background. He's an American. We have a young couple next door. He was born in this house, and when Mom passed away, he's taken it over and renovated it.
I want to meet him. How many years ago would that have been?
Oh, he's now about, Alexei, I told you, I think, about Alexei. He's Barbara Goddard's son.
Okay.
The street lane is going to be named after Barbara.
Oh, good. Okay, I want to meet.
And
but you're saying that there's still a variety of
here
kinds
now,
of people
yeah.
in this neighborhood
yeah,
right
there's
now.
Every, yeah, you, so, and then down the street I know there are Italians, and there's Portuguese on one side.
It's so, still a mixed
and there's neighborhood. And there's a Jewish family down the street that that I've been into their home, and I know, because she was telling me they have their dishes on one side, you know, one cupboards and that, so they're here. But they've only been here for about maybe 15, 16, or 20 years. I'm not sure how long. So we have a little bit of everybody on Major Street. I can see from Sussex down to Harbor, because
so
I know those.
Small community. Talk about, please, the safety. What was it like in 44 and 54 and 64 and now 2013? Safety in this neighborhood. What are your impressions?
Had any problems?
No.
No, we played out on the street. We were into everybody's homes. And
there was never this idea, you know, you're going up to play till it got dark and then you would come in and go to bed or, you know, we'll do your homework. You know, nobody, they just shout out, you know, Bill, and, you know, or go get your sister.
Yeah.
John was already, because there's that 7-year gap. That's a big time.
Yeah. It is.
You know, and then he took on
working all the time.
took on that responsibility. Yeah. Well, I work too, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
We were very fortunate, Ann and I, and you too, because friends of ours that came with our folks from Europe had bought farms.
That's right.
And in the Arendelle area, you know, that Arendelle Station Road in that area. And so up until I think I was 17, before going to university, I think it was, I spent every summer on the farm.
Me too.
And the first farm was...
like 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we went out and we picked raspberry. The first farm had poultry and then the other farm with fox.
Yeah.
And he was the guy that always delivered eggs to the house.
Yeah, we had an egg delivery and chickens.
You know, so if you wanted eggs and chickens every week, and then I would
live
go out and deliver eggs.
I was working all that time.
And he not only did this area, like my friend Maria, who lives on Clinton, her parents bought live chickens and eggs from him. So he brought in his eggs and chickens from
West Toronto.
Yeah. So when... You bought live chickens?
Yes.
Who would kill the chickens?
Mummy, I don't know if my mother did, but we would, when we went with Lichtenakers, like, you know, they would go delivering their eggs and chickens on Saturday.
Also pulled by a horse?
No, this would be in a truck.
Okay.
And so you'd come to the house and the lady, she'd pick out her chicken.
Oh my gosh.
And then she would take it to some place. She'd wring its neck. And then she'd cut it, and that was it.
But they also, if I remember correctly, they did come through the streets with chickens and crates, you know, like the containers.
So you'd have half a dozen chicken in a crate.
You go out and get your chicken,
that's
or you go down to, it was not unusual, people going down to Kensington Market and get them. The chicken would be wrapped up in newspaper, you know, and you just carry it like a bouquet of flowers, you know, head sticking out. And then
yeah, it was
the
dead
old,
by that time.
Because some people would come and keep it in a, you know, some sort of a container, you know, for chickens. And I don't know, what I was trying to remember if some people actually kept chickens along here somewhere
for a few days, for a long time.
We never had a chicken pet, but when I started teaching, I started teaching in the early 60s at St. Francis of Assisi, and across the street, one of my students in her home had a pet chicken. And she would bring this chicken out on the veranda there, and that was her pet. Yeah. You had rabbits here in the backyard.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So you remember people walking with the chicken was wrapped in paper, but it was alive, and it would be squawking or whatever.
You wanted it totally fresh, so I mean, you might keep it sitting in, you know, like a. Some sort of a box for 2 or 3 days till you're ready to
Sunday to cook it,
and somebody would then wring its neck
or chop the head. That's what they did on the farm.
Clean it, of course.
Yeah, of course. You pull out. You know, they put it in hot water and pluck it.
Yeah.
And I remember
on the farm.
Remember when Joe would get the eggs ready? Well, you know, we buy eggs now in the store. You don't find a blood spot, right? Well, there they had one of those oil cans. And they had cut a hole in it, and they put a lamp in, and every egg was turned to be checked that there were no blood spots on the eggs.
Yeah.
candle, they call it.
Because people wouldn't want to buy eggs with blood in it. So if you get a pile of them, well, you take the blood out and then you make a cake or something. Yeah. Yeah. Because there's nothing wrong.
No,
actually.
Right. But people didn't want to buy those eggs.
So do they sell those at a lower cost price?
I guess they did. They might have had them and said, you know, there's a little blood spot on. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, but they used to candle every, you know, they would before we'd go out and sell them.
Okay, so we digressed a little.
Sure.
We're talking about the safety of the
neighborhood. Oh, yes, okay.
And you're saying that it was a safe place.
Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah.
I only remember one incident when I was coming home from school. I thought somebody was following me, and I ran quickly, and I came home. And then
when
I was in elementary school. And then one time I was coming down Major Street, and I was in my teens, maybe the middle to late 50s, and I thought a guy was following me, and I ran into Nellie's store. Uh-huh. And I said, I think somebody's following me. So he stood at the door and watched that I got home safely. And then I watched this guy, he went up, halfway up, and then he went back.
But he
knew that, Nellie's person was there.
But that's saying something very significant about the neighborhood. Because you felt frightened and you stopped in the store and the store owner knew you.
Yes.
And you knew you would be safe
yes.
there.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And that was one thing, like, because they were open late at night too, right? Because they, you know, people would pop in for milk or whatever, right? So they would be there for the customers. And so you were always aware that somebody would be on the street there looking for you.
That's part of it. Being a community, a neighborhood, a community.
And because there were the older generation, there was always that presence. You know, either they're sitting on the
verandas and that.
Or, you know, they were around, you know, mm-hmm. so there was that sense of something. But, I mean, I don't ever
playing
remember
as a child
feeling, that there was a concern or that our folks showed a concern about being out, mm-hmm. you know. That was getting us in.
That's right.
Street, you know, I mean,
so
little kids.
Go outside and play.
Because I remember, at night you'd play, by the lamppost, you'd play hide and go seek. That was a big game, you know. Everybody kind of ran off and then trying to find people. So
the street was a big playground.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
It was, really,
yeah.
And things, and things changed then as I, after elementary school, I went to a private school. I went to De La Salle up on Avenue Road, and then you went to St. Joe's, and I think, people did different things. If you went to Central Tech when we moved here because you were getting ready to go to high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember Lloyd, he went to, for want of a better word, I guess, a divinity school to study. I think it was in the States because I think he became a rabbi.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was a separation.
And then they began to move out, our friends. Like, were moving away because their parents bought homes somewhere else,
So that changed. And then we were away in the summer. And then obviously you gravitated to, as you did, most of your friends were friends from the school.
Yeah.
And I mean,
from
till
Central
this
Tech.
Till this day, I mean, some of them now have passed away, but you still kept in touch with those kids, even though they're out our way, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so our friends, in many ways, as you became a teenager, became the kids where you went to school.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember visiting some of them, like Abby, I can't remember, somewhere in West Toronto he moved to. It wasn't up into the north area. And visiting, but that connection began to change, as you got a little older.
When you were young, the connection was the street,
the
neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they went to their schools and
went to the Jewish schools
of wherever
the
they went
down,
to.
Where I went at St. Patrick's.
But by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you were on the street again.
Oh, of course,
as little children.
Yes, they were. They were younger. I was working.
Yeah.
But you brought. I can remember you were bringing the kid, the people from Central Tech over here.
Sure, why not?
And then I remember it was in your last year in high school. I remember because they did architectural, and you had built these house models, and then they had this big bonfire.
We burned
all these things.
So you made these house models, and then you burned them.
Yes.
I mean, it was like rite of passage. I don't know.
But you know, it's. I'm listening to you talk, and you were at Central Tech, and you're 80 now, mm-hmm. which means this was more than 60 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
We're talking about
65.
Because you went to work by the time you were 18, full time.
Oh yeah.
And so that's, and this is 2013. That's like, we're talking about a very long time ago. And these stories are so clear. Your memories are so clear.
And you know what I used to do talking about Central Tech? You know, like this lady who goes around and collects the cans. I, on the way home from St. Peter's, used to go into Central Tech just at the doorway and bring all of their bottles, like pop bottles. Those older kids, they didn't want to carry the pop bottle around. I would bring the pop bottle to Nellie, and she would give me a penny for each of those pop bottles.
See,
so okay. I was like a collector of bottles.
Yeah,
but like, you know, and with that money, we could buy
stuff with one penny at that time.
That's right.
Yeah. How about the streets in terms of traffic? I mean, I know the children were playing on the streets, but cars,
You had horses. I mean, I remember like a couple of them here. This was getting on later on, but they literally parked their horses out here. You know, they put that piece of iron, which was like almost like an anchor with the straps, and they plunk it. You know, and the horse would be out there for hours sometimes, you know.
Eating.
Eating on the street. So, I mean... Dad had a truck, which was part of the business,
right?
And did he park it? I don't even remember him parking in the garage. Did Where did he park it? Or left it at the store? Okay, and then the people upstairs, Ross, he had a car, and then Keith later on had a car as well. So they had these lovely sedans, which they just parked on the street. Because there weren't these signs out here, no parking, you know.
And there weren't very many cars.
And there weren't. No. And that's why we, like, I mean, you could, the odd car, if we were sitting out there playing hockey on the street,
that's hockey.
I mean, you know, hardly a car came by. It wasn't like, you know, they just drive right through the stop signs now. And, you know, if you're standing there, you're lucky if you don't get out of the way, right? So that's a big change, right?
Yeah.
How did you, if you needed to go somewhere that wasn't easy walking distance, what public transportation existed?
Well,
in the 40s and 50s. What street?
There was a streetcar on Bloor Street.
I took the Bloor car, and then I remember we were on those old wooden streetcars where they had two conductors and a stove on it. A little stove on it, and then they used to go up that big hill because it was on Avenue Road, you know, just south of St. Clair, and the school is still there, De La Salle, and we used to say, this thing's not going to get up. And then I remember, because it was still in my time, because it was when they built the Yonge Subway, Summerhill Station. And then, I guess it was either in my third or fourth year at high school, it changed. So we would take the Bloor Street car over to Yonge, get on the subway, and then we were into the subway age. You know, that, how quickly things were changing already, you see.
But do you remember the streetcar with a stove on it?
Yeah. It was those, and you've probably seen them. They were like rectangular boxes, you know.
And that's how
they heated it.
And then when we were on the farm, we would come into the exhibition on a train, and we would walk to Aaron, like our friend's farm was right on the border of the track, like, you know, where their fence was. So we would walk, there was a little station, we would get the flag, and we would wave the flag, and the train stopped. And we got on the train, and it would bring us down here to the exhibition.
Yeah.
And then we'd get off, and going home, we'd get on there, and then we'd tell the conductor we want to get off at Arundel Station Road, and he'd let us off at Arundel Station Road. That's how we used
very good throughput at that time. Today you would tell get out.
Very personalized service.
Yes, and here you'd have this huge train coming at you, you know, in the middle of just a little train station and fields. Now they're all houses. It's all built up, right?
Yeah,
so, and farm. This huge engine coming at you, and you'd think, oh, you're scared, a little kid, right? And we would come in every year to the exhibition, and Teresa would bring us in, and we'd spend 5 or 6 hours there, and then we'd hop on the train and go back.
pretty special memories. What about the heating? You talked about the big coal chute.
Yeah, they, you know, that big furnace, big round, and then we had a little what they call the jacket heater that actually fed like a tank holder that was for the hot water. And so whenever you wanted hot water, you fired up this little jacket heater. You know, it's like a small little stove, and that had a special pipe leading to heat up the hot water.
That was downstairs.
Yes. So there was a special room, the big, big furnace with all of these big, round, big pipes going up to the ducts, you know, and that would
And the coal man used to come there where the chute is, like there was that little set-off part.
But it was a big metal room.
Yeah, no, it was big. And then he would bring enough coal, like it would fill the whole thing for the winter, right? And you'd have this little shovel, and you'd take the shovel and throw it into the jacket heater to heat the jacket heater.
And who would do that?
Well, we would. I would actually, as a kid, have a responsibility to... And then you had to stoke, you had to fire in the furnace, you know, to heat up. I mean, there were a lot of houses along here. I think one good thing, and I can't remember whether we did it, maybe we did it, I remember, but a lot of these houses, even some of them till maybe 10 years ago, and even some of them now, they didn't have full cellars. And that's why you
There's
see a lot of sudden, you know, digging out, because, you know, they would have a part cellar, but a lot of them now have made these cellars into living units, right?
Yeah.
So they would bring the coal in on a wagon. The fellow would put them into these, on their backs, and then come along the little hall or a little alley there, and then it went into that lot. And so there was this big pile of coal.
And they were always
for
black,
the whole winter.
Like from all the soot and everything, they were all covered, and they did have this leather thing on, right? Because he was getting all this. Well, the dust charcoal. off of the coals.
Yeah.
And then we would shovel it into the furnace before we would go to
bed. So it would go down the chute
down into this
your home,
into
and
this
then you would put it into the fire.
Yeah, and then you had like a pail, big heavy iron pail, and you'd fill that up, and you'll always left that at the jacket heater so that when you needed to put some stuff in. And even here in our house when we got it, when we inherited it, I remember it wasn't down deep, but we still had the beams coming down, and my mom hung the clothes down there to dry when she couldn't hang them outside, right?
Would they get dirty?
No, they were, because the coal bin room was off.
Oh,
it was all closed off. Like it was closed off.
So,
and then when we moved back here, they dug out of hole, like you made maybe a foot or two to lower the floor.
So that's more room.
Yeah, because if you were a real tall person, you'd be hitting the beams with your head.
And so then you changed from coal. When would that have been that you got rid of the coal?
And then we went to oil.
Oil was big. You know, they brought in those big tanks. You know, where you oil up once.
And do you have any idea when that might
happen? I can't remember.
I can't either, when the big transition happened.
And then when I moved back, we put in gas.
And air conditioned the house.
Because it was a huge tank, I mean, down there in the basement.
So you've gone through all these different, from coal to oil to gas and air conditioning. A lot of transitions through the decades.
So when you hear people complain, you know, be up there on the third floor on those hot July days, you know, and little fan to blow in a breeze, you know. So now everything, you know, most...
We just opened windows, remember, when it was so hot. You just opened the window
because
we never thought of... Who complained? We were happy we had a bed and a room.
When did you put the air conditioning in?
When we moved back in.
And
that was about in 2000. 2000, we renovated the basement.
Our folks didn't want it, so
no.
They were a little more...
Even when my mom was still alive, and that was into the late 90s, this was living room, their living room, bedroom, and the kitchen here, and that was the summer kitchen.
Yeah.
So she continued to use her... The bedroom was still on the first floor.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess she didn't like change very much.
Well, I don't know.
Were you upstairs?
Yeah, I had the whole run of the second and third floor.
I see. That's why she didn't want to move upstairs.
Well, she could have, but I guess.
We talked about the market. What about the university? Do you have any thoughts about the university as our neighbor?
As our neighbor. Well, I never went to university. I did my university at night school. I went to St. Joe's, and then I went to Teachers College for a year, and then in night school, because in the 60s, they all said, oh, well, you know, you get married, you don't need university. I mean, that's what some people thought, right? And so, oh, yeah. I mean, so that's what we did. And then when I was teaching, I got my degree at night courses and summer courses. So I really didn't think too much of of the university at that time. So,
but you're talking about the encroachment, are you?
Whatever.
You went to university right after high school. Yeah.
And, but I mean, as I see some of these big towers going up and that sort of thing, I mean, but it's happening all over. It's just not in this area. But you hate to see maybe some of the older places getting ripped down. But U of T is doing a good job, I think, in integrating some of the old into the newer structure. So there's some still that element of it. But it's unfortunate. I think Robert has been declared a historic
street.
They won't touch. But, I mean, you see increasingly. I know the worst thing that happened around here was the... when aluminum became popular, and you can see some of the houses. I mean, even this house, and then Anne changed everything and put in wooden windows, but a lot of them still show the remnant of the gouging where aluminum covered everything, and it was the in thing to do. So many houses kind of were butchered in sense of that traditional. Mm-hmm. And then other people have come in who haven't got any sense, like this one on the corner over here. It's just one big rectangular box, you know, and they got four families in it. But a lot of people, like you were talking, who are moving in? Well, I think simply because of the price of the houses, the people that are coming in essentially are people who are professional, like they're two university people, I understand, moving in here next door.
Family.
And there are more people, I think, of that kind of moving in because they needed the money in order to afford these houses.
That has to force a change.
And so that changes So you're not having a lot of rental or such.
Or I don't care if they rent, but like some of the houses along here, they've made like access from the front into the... So they've sort of changed like the look of that house. I don't like that personally. You know, I wish this was also a historical street. And that's when my neighbors were selling. I said to her, I hope it's not going to be, you know, divide, because before they moved back in themselves, it was rented three floors. Yeah. And I said to her, and she said, oh, no, Anne. And they have, it's all like one home unit, you know, so you can't really rent it out. I mean, they'd have to really rearrange everything to do that for my house. And Alf...
Interesting that it's gone cyclical now, because an order, like this house next door just went for $1,200,000, right?
Whoa!
And another one down here, that white house I noticed is sold.
$1,000,010.
So that's typical around here now. So a lot of people moving in may not have the resources. So just the same as our parents rented out, they are now living probably in the house, maybe even the whole house, but in the basement they've been turned into... a nice living unit.
Oh, the unit, like the basement unit, is lovely.
So, and then,
like she was saying, it's for it could be used for a nanny, which is could be because they have the people moving in have two kids. But like when you change the whole, like along here, when you walk, if you walk down Major Street, you can see that people have made access to the basement unit
directly from the outside.
And that sort of changes the feel of the place. Do you know what I'm saying? And I mean, if they could do access from the back or something, or the side, it's a different story, right? So I wish this was a historical street.
And then they would be limited.
You can't change the outside. You can change the inside or whatever.
This has been wonderful. Okay, I'm wondering, I mean, both of you made a nice trek from Mississauga, and you organized all this. when you knew that I was coming, were there some stories that you were thinking about, just knowing that we were going to sit and talk for a little while, anything that we haven't touched on at all that you thought about? And if so, now's the time.
I don't think you were involved in that, either of you, in the baseball thing that happened at Christie Pitts, where, you know, that was before our time.
There was a big riot there.
Yeah, the riot that occurred
We used to, that was another area where we would go and play, because when there was snow, you know, they had the hills there. So obviously with a toboggan or a sleigh, we spent time there. I don't know what else in terms of... Growing up, as I said, it was a fairly connected community, you know, around maybe four or five houses, and we interrelated and related. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't the sort of thing where, you know, like there would be like a street party or things like that. I mean, it was pre-barbecue, you know, and all of that kind of thing that, you know, people sort of respected each other. They interrelated, they talked, but it was sort of like mind your own, not necessarily mind your own business, but, you know, you had your life, and then, you know, socially we interrelated as required, but...
On the street.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you came in. The children went into each other's
homes. Yes.
That's right. And so it was natural, because as kids you played. Mm-hmm. And I can remember... with Lloydie's, I mean, you talked about playing house, and I remember we used to have do plays in his backyard. You remember, as kids, you know,
and
you
know, put them on for us.
I think that's where I got my theater interest, you know.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing, you know, that you played.
And then once the kids moved out, the people who moved in, they didn't really have kids like our age. Like, they would have younger kids, like my Greek neighbors who have moved in. You know, like, they married and moved in, and then they had, like, maybe had little kids. So we had no connection with them. So there were no kids on the street anymore, like, to play with me, because they were all gone. So, like, when I was, you know, in the 15, I went to work at Woolworths.
And where was that?
That was where, you know, where the Dollarama is now. That was Woolworths.
So you had no one to play with, and you went to work in your spare
time. So when I'm 15, I got a job at Woolworths, and, you know, and then I became a cashier there, and I worked there through all of high school. So there were no more young people, like the young teenagers that I would have, like Shane, though she moved away, and nobody moved in.
Except for families with little kids.
Little kids. So then you don't, you know, you got to know them and say hi and everything, but to play with or to go anywhere with, then you started high school and you made friends there.
Yeah.
So it was different, you know.
John, anything that we haven't talked about that was... Your life, as you say, was a little bit different. You were older and you needed to go to work.
That's right.
While they were playing on
That's
the street.
Right, yes.
Well, he got cars. He bought cars.
I bought a car for myself.
Yeah.
I bought about three of them for my lifetime.
And how old were you when you bought your first car?
Oh, probably in my 20s.
Uh-huh. And you parked it on the street in front here.
Yeah, in one of those little English cars.
English cars, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was that one of the first cars around here? Or, I mean, not too many cars is what I mean.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
There always were some around here.
Yeah.
Even now they're coming.
Well, now
the little ones.
Parking is different. But I think, I'm sure, I was trying to remember what Lloyd's dad did. What did he, was, he wasn't a lawyer, was he?
I'm not sure.
I knew he had some sort of a professional job. But I can't remember what it was.
I think we'll stop. Do you all have the same last name?
Yes, we're all
Carners.
I never married.
Okay.
So,
none of us, we don't believe in marriage.
No,
K-A-R-N-E-R.
So, as I said, today is the 26th of April, and I'm with Anne and Bill and John Carner, and this has been a pleasure for me to listen to your wonderful stories. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.